Hey folks, have you heard of cancer-fighting foods? The American Cancer Society discovered diets rich in fruits and vegetables may actually lower your risk of cancer. Think about that for a second. That's really important. Hopefully you hear this and run to the store for 5 servings of fruits and vegetables every day. But if you're like me, you probably don't have the time to do that, right? So maybe you should consider adding Field of Greens to your daily health regimen. Each fruit and veggie in Field of Greens was doctor selected for studied health benefits. There's a heart health group, lungs, kidneys, and metabolism groups, even healthy weight. What your body needs is in each scoop of delicious Field of Greens. I take it every day. Sometimes I put it in a shake. Sometimes I put it in my egg white omelet in the morning. Field of Greens can help prevent, treat, and cure cancer? No, but it can powerfully help you out at your next checkup. Your doctor will notice your improved health or you're going to get your money back. Here's the most amazing thing about it. I started using Field of Greens a year ago. My cholesterol is down, my blood sugar is down, my weight's down, my health is up, my sleeping patterns are better, my metabolism is up. If you want to experience what I've experienced, go check out Field of Greens. Jump into the ring here. You're going to get an enormous benefit. And it's so simple. Single scoop, a couple of seconds, healthy lifestyle all day long. Now, thanks to our good friends at Brickhouse Nutrition, Field of Greens is going to give you a 15% off discount plus free rush shipping. All you got to do is go to fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code JUSTNEWS for your discount. That's promo code JUSTNEWS at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com, promo code JUSTNEWS. Go check it out. Hello, America, and happy Friday. A big news day around Washington. So many things going on. There may be a new speaker fight. I just said that, yes. I know you're like, no, not again. Well, yep, maybe again. Yeah. Here's why. The Republican-led bill, the $1.2 trillion Christmas tree bill, the minibus, went into Congress today. It was passed, but mostly with Democrat votes. Mike Johnson needed the Democrats, and this bill is chock full of money for a gay senior citizen home and transgender surgeries and abortion clinics and even tuition for Egyptian college students. Why are we paying for Egyptians to go to college? It was so angering to so many Republicans who voted against it that Marjorie Taylor Greene basically came out and said, I'm done with Mike Johnson. She filed a motion to vacate the chair. It won't get considered this week. It'll be delayed until after the Easter holiday, but warning signs for Mike Johnson all across the board. And in today's show, I have 2 interviews with 2 members of Congress who are Mike Johnson fans. They share his political views, both who say, I'm pretty sure you're going to hear this, that they think Mike Johnson's time is up. One of them is Warren Davidson of Ohio. The other is the great South Carolina Congressman Ralph Norman. We're going to focus on the instability, the dissatisfaction, the unhappiness in Congress throughout today. So both Warren Davidson and Ralph Norman are going to give us an update on that. Right after the motion to vacate was filed by Marjorie Taylor Greene, Wisconsin Congressman Mike Gallagher, he bailed. He said, I'm not even going to finish out my term. He's like the second or third one to do this. Bye-bye, I'm leaving. And that will leave at the end of, or in the middle of April, Republicans will only have a single seat majority. Single seat majority. Wow. Members go and say they're going to be part of Congress and they selfishly bail out. They don't serve their constituents. Pretty remarkable situation. And so these are the big stories around here today, and they're going to dominate the first part of our newscast. Now, last night, there was a really important set of developments. First, Jim Jordan went to court to enforce subpoenas to compel 2 Justice Department tax attorneys to come in and testify about whether there was a cover-up or political interference in the Hunter Biden tax case. That was the first shoe to drop. A few hours after that, another shoe dropped. Another shoe. A big shoe. That shoe is the announcement from Jim Jordan and James Comer that they have a whistleblower who claims that the CIA blocked IRS and FBI agents from interviewing Kevin Morris, the man we first identified as having provided millions of dollars of assistance to Hunter Biden since his father was running for president. So the 2024 timeframe. So this is current money. It's over $6 million, according to members of Congress. That is a pretty significant change. And what it means, and there's a good story that Stephen Richards and I wrote this morning, that the impeachment phase is starting to move to a new phase. It isn't just about the grift and the influence peddling operation. It's also moving into the cover-up. And I think that before we're done, there will be an examination of 2019, 20, 21, 22, 23. Were there cover-ups to protect Hunter Biden, Joe Biden, to keep the story from coming out? Were deep state actors? Remember, that was a term that James Comer last week on the show, he came on the show last week, he said, we're going to start to look at the deep state actors who tried to cover this up. That was the clue of the pivot that occurred last night. So that story is really trending all day today at Just the News and should be really closely watched. It's a very, very important development. Remember, it was the cover up in Watergate that ultimately snared Richard Nixon back in 1974. So that is the main stories that are out there. I want to point out a couple other things that are kind of important. We had the Supreme Court case. We talked a lot about it and the free speech case. And obviously there's some concerns about whether the justices are going to actually say the government can continue to talk to these social media platforms about things they want censored or knocked off or they think are untrue. But Greg Piper did a story today, and later this week, you're going to hear from Mike Benz, the head of the Foundation for Freedom Online. Mike Benz and Greg Piper put together a list of real stories, true stories, things that are actually true that your government and their actors, like nonprofit groups and the big tech companies, were censoring and canceling and keeping the American people. They were canceling truth. And by the way, there used to be a term misinformation, but now that we've showed that many of the things that the government and its friends in the nonprofit and big tech world canceled were not misinformation, they've created a new term called malinformation. Malinformation is things we just don't like, so we're going to cancel them. Wow, what happened to the First Amendment? And I think the answer is a change in education over the last couple of decades got a whole generation of, or two maybe, of Americans to not appreciate or to underappreciate or to reject the notion that the Bill of Rights contains inalienable rights, rights given to us by God, inalienable. All of a sudden, inalienable rights have become inconvenient rights. And you saw this the other day with Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, who actually said, my concern is the First Amendment is hampering the government. Yeah, it was supposed to. But she thought, said it as though it were a bad thing. These are very, very troubling, very, very important times. And take a look at Greg Piper's story. It's a very important story. When your friends say, hey, we want to get rid of misinformation, say, you didn't. You got rid of accurate information. Hunter Biden's laptop. The Wuhan lab is a possible source of the COVID virus. And so many other things like it. Remember, Just the News was in the crosshairs of a lot of those cancel culture people. All right, that is my thoughts for the day. Keep an eye on developments. One other one that's out there, House Judiciary Committee Chairman Jim Jordan, just a few minutes ago, subpoenaed the ghostwriter for President Biden's autobiography, the guy that Robert Hur said got classified information shared with him. He's not responding to a congressional request for documents. So Jim Jordan said, well, here's a subpoena. We'll see you under compelment. We'll compel you. All right. That's an important development. Now, let me quickly turn to a couple of my good friends who make this show, make what we do every day possible. I think it's so important that we shout out and support the folks that we have. One of them are my good friends at Muzzlestick. As you know, Muzzlestick is an incredible product. It puts a flag, a colorful flag inside a chamber or barrel of a gun to let anyone know, particularly people who are not experienced with guns, that the gun is loaded or unloaded. It tells them its status. As you know, most accidental shootings occur because someone didn't know how to use a gun that was loaded, and boom, tragedy happens and a life is lost or a body is wounded. Muzzlestick and its great team, Joe, the owner, and all the folks that we deal with, Leah, the great safety expert, Muzzlestick saves lives. And if you go to muzzlestick.com, use the promo code JustNews, you'll get a discount and an opportunity to make a difference for Muzzlestick. Go do that today. They're great, great folks. In the next block, after we finish things up with Warren Davidson, I want to tell you a little bit about what Alliance Defending Freedom is doing. There's some really historical cases before the Supreme Court, and we'd love you to find a way to support them. We'll do that in the next block. But first, let's hear from our great sponsors, partners, and advertisers. We'll be right back.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Bite clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Welcome back, America. We're going to dive in for a moment into that budget we told you about at the top of the speaker. House Speaker Mike Johnson released a $1.2 trillion plan to fund government agencies through the end of September, the end of this fiscal year. Lawmakers are expected to vote on this 1,000-page bill called a minibus, I guess is what they're calling it, tomorrow. So they got about 30 hours to go through 1,000 pages, and it's going to put about $1.2 trillion more in spending on this year's tab. Joining us now to talk more about this is one of those lucky individuals who's had to read through those 1,000 pages before tomorrow. He's a congressman representing the great state of Ohio and a member of the House Foreign Affairs, one of our favorites, Congressman Warren Davidson. Congressman, great to have you on the show.
Always an honor to join you. Thanks, John.
A lot in this bill, another temporary spending bill, another long bill gets dropped shortly before the vote. Probably not the best look Republicans want, but at least gets the deal done. Tell us your top line on this.
Well, the only thing really novel on this is we did get about 30 hours to read it. You know, usually the tradition is you publish it between 10 p.m. and 2 a.m. And then tomorrow, the next day, you vote somewhere between 10 a.m. and noon on the bill. So at least they're pretending to allow time. The rules are supposed to give you 72 hours at a minimum. But at least directionally, this is a win. And those are the kind of really tiny wins that you're seeing people celebrate. Like, well, you know, we got longer than we did before. Well, we got more, you know, ICE agents. Well, yeah, but you don't have any policy changes. So all they're going to do is process more illegals into the country faster to facilitate Joe Biden's invasion of our country. Yeah. So, you know, it's a defeat. We shouldn't, you know, be like the people in Moneyball celebrating in the dugout after we just lost. Right. There's things that you could point to that went better than they could have, but this is not the win we promised. Fundamentally, we said we were going to spend less money and we were going to secure the border, and we didn't do either of those.
Yeah, you're going to end up going into Republicans going into that election. Look at it. Will you vote for or against this bill? Where are you on this actual specific spending?
Strongly against it.
Yeah,
very opposed and very disappointed, but, you know, we'll be voting.
Yep. Now, I know you are. And I know you work really hard and you say what you mean what you say. And I think that your voters are going to know you are on the side of trying to fight this, but obviously there's enough votes here. It's going to pass. There was things coming in and out of this bill all through the night yesterday, all day yesterday, all through the night. One of them is the ban on central bank digital currencies was taken out of the final version. I know you have a lot of concerns about central bank digital currencies. Your thoughts on it being taken out and the long-term threat that CBDC poses?
Yeah, thanks for highlighting that, John. I think, look, central bank digital currencies, like the creepiest surveillance tool known to man, you know, China's doing this, and unfortunately, so is our country. Yeah. And you could see that. The House had a ban. It said you can't design, develop, or establish a central bank digital currency. And the Federal Reserve is actively hiring people to write code to develop a central bank digital currency. So they say, oh, well, we can't really establish it without Congress. And that's like letting, you know, the Empire in Star Wars build the Death Star and then promise not to turn it on. Once
that's
the thing's built, it poses a real threat. And when the central bank can control your access to your money, they can filter it and shape it. And the kinds of things they've done to speech are the tip of the iceberg once they get the coercive power over money.
Yeah, and the ability to track every transaction, which we're already seeing signs of with the credit card companies. It just gets all the more intrusive. There's a lot of discussion about the lack of difference in the Mike Johnson era from the Kevin McCarthy era. And I know, listen, both speakers ended up with a very short majority. Is there any risk that someone's going to file a motion to vacate and start this process again? Or does Mike Johnson take the Republican team through the November election?
I think he's likely to take it through the November election, but all these are data points to say, you know, should we stay with him as the speaker? There's a lot of conversation about that as we look at, you know, hopefully defending our majority, hopefully growing it, frankly.
Right.
Can we set somebody up to be a more effective speaker? And I think part of it is we don't have a unified plan. If you look at the party as a whole, the party hasn't had a new platform since 2016. The GOP was reluctant to embrace Donald Trump, and they never really fully implemented his platform. It wasn't updated in 2020. And to this day, you've really got like free-range Republicans making some similar promises, but we haven't united behind something. And look, Mike Johnson confronted something no other speaker has. Right. He had to become speaker mid-Congress. So he wasn't set up for success, but nevertheless, there's a lot of disappointment.
Yeah, I think that it's getting louder and more clear every day, and it's going to be a challenge for some Republicans to go back to their districts and explain the record that will have been rolled up in the first 2 years there. But I know you're already looking ahead. There's a new blueprint already out for 2025. It would balance the budget in 7 years, reduce taxes, I think, by about $5 trillion over 10 years. Literally the opposite of what Joe Biden wants to do. He wants to put $5 trillion more taxes on and, of course, blow the deficit up. That document, I think, is a starting point for maybe some optimism and some unity going into the 2025 budget year. What do you think?
Well, look, the encouraging thing is they're talking about a smaller government. Yeah. And that's the problem. We've got a fatal overdose of government coming at us. And unfortunately, the spending bill we're voting on tomorrow spends even more. You know, we're adding $1 trillion worth of debt every 100 days. And the only plan right now is to accelerate that. So this is a clear break from it. It's not a perfect plan. You know, one of the things I don't like in it is it has means testing for Social Security right. in future generations, not current beneficiaries. But at some point in the future, there's means testing for Social Security. I'll have to wade into it and see it. But we all know that you can't keep spending more than you have. And eventually this path that we're on leads to a crash site. So I just hope that as we approach that, the people that actually want a smaller government prevail, because the reality is the majority, everyone on the left wants a bigger government. And frankly, half the people on the right want a bigger government too. They're just big business, big government, some form of bigger government that does different things than the left's big government. But that's why you get $34 trillion in debt, is because the consensus is the real threat are people like me that want smaller government. Yeah. But I think that's where the population is. That's what the country wants, because they know that's what we need.
Yeah, no, they do. Listen, they've learned now that inflation is a direct result of all that big government spending that's occurred, and it's killing their wallets. It really is. I want to turn to another issue. I think it was one of the most important events this week, the Afghanistan hearing. The tragedy of Afghanistan and the mindset that led to it, the withdrawal, and I think has had this repercussion all across our foreign policy. Our allies stress us less, and our enemies want to exploit us more. What did you walk away from General Milley and the others' testimony in that hearing?
Yeah, four real tragic lessons learned. I mean, the most basic, you don't have to have served in the military to know that first you get the civilians out, then you get the military out. What a dumb idea, you know? And with the benefit of hindsight, a lot of people in the State Department still won't admit that that was a complete failure. But we should definitely be clear on that. I think the other one is you got to have very clear rules of engagement. And that's on the Department of Defense. They can't blame State Department for that. That was one of the things I made clear with General McKenzie. State Department didn't make the rules of engagement. Department of Defense did. Yep. And you had this great sergeant who survived, but tragically, you know, many people did not at Abbey Gate, the bombing. And he was the sniper that had the suspected bomber in his sights and asked for authorization to take the shot. And no one would give him authorization. So you've got to have clear rules of engagement, and you have to be empowering the people on the objective. You can't relay this up through the Pentagon to the National Command Authority for some of these kinds of things. They're consequential, but if you don't trust the person on the ground to take the shot, you got to get a different person on the ground. And that was clearly broken. And I think, you know, maybe one of the other big ones is, you know, go back to what we were doing there for so long. I mean, it was clearly just to go into Afghanistan post 9/11. But as we stayed there and got into nation building and everything else, you had this phrase that they kept repeating, as much as it takes, as long as it takes. Well, that's not a mission statement. And General Milley made it clear no one in the military could get away with saying that's the mission statement. But that's what the civilian and military population, the leadership did, Congress did for 20 years. And so we didn't define success. And to apply that, that's essentially what they're trying to do in Ukraine. Same phrase, as much as it takes, as long as it takes. And when you do that, you don't have the right kinds of level of authorization, a specific mission, so that you can hold anyone accountable for, frankly, success or failure.
Yeah, a lot of this starts with mindset and policies, and I'm not sure that the lessons have been learned there. I know you've learned them and you've preached them, and I know you're trying to change them. Real quickly, got about 30 seconds left. How big a mistake was Chuck Schumer's attack on Israel, and is it going to have a repercussion down in the next foreign aid bill?
Well, I hope it has immediate impact on foreign aid, but I'd love to see it have the kind of impact that New York needs a different senator. I mean, good grief, how out of step with the state of New York do you have to be? I mean, that doesn't work in Ohio, but I can't imagine. I mean, I went to college at West Point in New York. I can't imagine being that out of step with the people that were in New York when I was there. So we're hearing about it from all over. He's wading in to into Israel's parliamentary election cycle to kind of get a more pro-Hamas leader for Israel.
All right, folks, don't go anywhere. Another member of Congress, Ralph Norman, one of our favorites. He calls things just like he sees them. No mincing of words. He'll join us. But before we do that, I've said this often. We're in a war on truth right now. Truth is being attacked in America. So are our ability to defend our truths, the First Amendment, the Second Amendment. Our freedoms are in an extraordinary moment of unrelenting attack. And the Bill of Rights is suddenly feeling to many people optional, particularly when you hear what Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson said in that free speech case the other day. Well, there is a group called Alliance Defending Freedom at adf.org/John. Alliance Defending Freedom has been protecting rights, suing in court for over 3 decades, and they're winning. Right now, they're involved in 2 critical cases before the nation's 9 justices, the Supreme Court. They're suing the FDA for endangering the health and safety of women and girls, and they're also assisting the state of Idaho to defend its abortion law, which has new restrictions to protect what lawmakers say are the unborn children in this country. There's a battle going on over that. Well, ADF is in the lead for those 2 major landmark cases. When they're decided, they're going to create new law in this country. They're going to new precedent, I should say, new legal precedent. So if you want to join that fight, if you want to have some skin in the game on protecting liberties like the First Amendment, your religious liberty, go check them out at adf.org/John. J-O-H-N is my name, of course. adf.org/John. Give any amount you can, $5, $10, $25, whatever you can afford. You'll make a big difference for my friends at the Alliance Defending Freedom, ADF. All right, we'll be back in a second with Ralph Norman, Congressman from South Carolina.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe, now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Welcome back, America. Many Republicans in Congress did not shy away from expressing their disgust over the last 24 hours as House Speaker Mike Johnson ramped through a 1,000-page, $1.2 trillion spending package chock full of Joe Biden's favorite programs and almost nothing for conservative causes. That resulted in an immediate motion filed by Marjorie Taylor Greene to vacate the chair to potentially remove Mike Johnson as the speaker. We've got a great guest to help us referee this. He voted against the bill. He's been fighting for fiscal sanity for as long as I can remember. Congressman Ralph Norman from the great state
of South Carolina joins us right now. Congressman, great to have you.
Glad to be with you, John. Appreciate it.
So, sir, this was a pretty hard day if you're a conservative trying to fight for fiscal sanity. Another big spending bill, and then right after that, a motion to vacate. Is Mike Johnson in trouble?
You know, I think he probably is, John, but there's a lot of issues to decide, like who takes his place. No one wants to see what we went through where really no one wanted it. It's a sad day for the country when we can't vote down a bill that just puts us further in debt. And that's what we did. 1,000 pages. No one really read it. We didn't have time to, and then further put our nation in debt along with us, a national security threat on top of that.
Yeah, that's a great point.
Yes, sir. Sir, I was up at 6 a.m. this morning, and there was a Freedom Caucus press conference, and I knew from that moment on how this day was going to go. There was someone in that press conference who said something to the effect of Republicans have the majority, but Democrats own the gavel. That's a pretty stark way to describe what happened today, but I do think it's accurate. Do you?
Yeah, it really is, Amanda. And what's frustrating for me is Republicans who campaign on fiscal conservatism, they campaign on voting to, secure the border. And then they come up here and basically cave and vote with Democrats. And it's we're just going to have a change in people. You're going to have a change in the mindset of those who come up here. And I don't know what it's going to take. You know, you saw the monstrosity of the atrocity of the migrants bull rushing the Border Patrol agents. And there's more to come on that. And we cannot take another 8 months of this under the Biden administration, but by voting for this bill, that's what you did, which puts this country in dire danger.
Yeah. The other thing, sir, and you did such a great job highlighting some of these earmarks, some of the stuff in this bill, it doesn't possibly match any value of the Republican Party. In fact, some of the things in this bill are outlawed in bills that you passed earlier this year. Can you go through some of the things that most bother you in these spending bills, these earmarks?
$1.3 billion for funding students to go to school in, Egypt.
Egypt, yeah.
Funding for abortion clinics. All the woke policies that, if you voted on them individually, John, nobody would have the courage to vote against them. These were just earmarks. And they would vote, if it was standalone, they would vote against it because they didn't want it tied to them. Yeah. But, it's just spending money we don't have, and we can secure a border in Libya, but can't secure our own border. It makes no sense.
Yeah, it sure doesn't.
Sir, do you think that it might deter folks who bill themselves as fiscal conservatives from voting for something like this if it was more publicized and exposed the way that they voted?
Man, I sure hope so. We're just now going through the list, but we're going to highlight everybody that voted for this bill along with the earmarks in their district, because it will shock you, the ones who had earmarks. And, everybody, again, says they're conservative until they get money back to their district, which they think it's, they want their reelection more than ever. And they'll do anything, including selling the country out. And we're at the end of the runway. We cannot continue this. And we'll live to fight another day. He didn't even get the majority of the Republicans.
Yeah.
In other words, the majority of the Republicans voted against this, but it just wasn't enough to stop the 296 votes needed on suspension on the calendar.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. So I want to ask for what you think happens next. You I think showed that there's got to be a smart pathway, just not another emotional vote. What do you think happens behind the scenes in the caucus? Obviously, Marjorie Taylor Greene will get recognized. She'll get her motion to privilege and out. How do things work out so we don't have a vote-a-thon and really not know who's going to be the next speaker?
I don't think we can go through that again, John.
Right.
I think we got to vote it on it within 48 hours. Right. So I guess we'll be back up in D.C. We should have never left. We should have worked this out with the budget and gotten more of a consensus. But Mike Johnson just would not do it. But I think the way it works out is get back in the into the halls of Congress. And I don't know who wants this job, but we cannot have the House without a speaker. This particular time, that's dangerous.
Yeah.
No one has stepped up, and Marjorie Taylor's going to have to explain how she wants to get this across the finish line. And if not Johnson, who?
Yeah, that's right.
I know. And I think you're right. I mean, who in the world wants this job? You know, getting ducks in a row and herding cats is, I think, what it feels like at best. I wanted to ask you, though, about Speaker Mike Johnson specifically. I do think that he is truly a conservative. But within this bill, there were some really problematic things that kind of lean towards incompetence, something that Chip Roy highlighted earlier today. The fact that there were things that you guys earlier in previous bills that, to be fair, have not been passed out of the Senate, but things that were outlawed that were actually in this bill. How does that get passed over? How does that happen?
Well, the same way that you had members of our caucus to get up and say that we don't need time to read it, just sign off on it. Mm-hmm. And I can't understand their thinking, Amanda. I really can't. I don't know how they justify it on bills, on funding a new FBI building, you know, the IRS agents that you've heard about, but all the pork barrel spending, the individual districts make no sense. They need to, we're going to publicize it and let them explain it to the district. Ultimately, this locks us in to an untenable amount of spending. And, you know, I think it's a trillion every 100 days they were adding to the deficit. It can't continue. And the only thing we can do is publicize it and let them own up to what they voted for.
Well, you've done more than almost anyone I know on the Hill to keep highlighting the insanity here. Congressman, I'm going to ask real quickly, this bill doesn't include Ukraine aid, so that's right around the corner. That's going to be another big ticket item, going to add perhaps $30, $40, $50 billion. What is the status of that, and is that likely to face a similar outcome like with this bill, where Democrats push it over the line for Mike Johnson?
Well, they had $300 million for Ukraine in this.
Okay.
Now, they want far more. And to get this, they don't want to offset it with anything. And Johnson went along with this, even the $300 million. But Israel desperately needs our support. But all of this has got to be offset. You cannot continue to pull money on the bar, you know, that we're paying interest on. We just can't keep that going. But he's, up to this point, been content to do that.
All right, folks, I've got one more good guest to go. Mark Mills, really one of the premier experts on energy in this country. He's got a lot to say about where things are. Let's hear from our great sponsors, partners, and advertisers. We'll be right back.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
All right, folks, welcome back. Great to be with you. When you get a chance, check out all the great work we have. I've got one more good guest to go. Mark Mills, really one of the premier experts on energy in this country. He's got a lot to say about where things are. Take a listen to this.
It is so clear from the news of the last few days that climate change is affecting every part of our country, not the actual climate change, the debate over it. That's right. Whether it's the future of our auto industry, which President Trump tried to address this weekend, or in the high court, where we're headed towards another big ruling on the powers of the regulatory state to dive into climate change when Congress never gave those federal bureaucrats that power. Well, we've got the perfect person to walk us through all this incredible history of the last few days. Mark Mills is a senior fellow at the Manhattan Institute and faculty fellow at Northwestern University's McCormick School of Engineering. He's one of our favorites when it comes to this topic. Mark, great to have you back on the show.
Great to be back. A quick correction. I'm still with the Manhattan Institute as a contributing editor of the Great City Journal, but I'm now with the Texas Public Policy Foundation, launching a new project, which we'll talk about on another segment.
How about that? All right. A little news there. Well, Mark, I want to start with something that came up over the weekend. There's obviously the conduct of the media that's a big part of this and kind of misinterpreting or the bloodbath comment that President Trump said. But what's really interesting is what the point President Trump was making is a point that the Congressional Budget Office and the Congressional Research Service have been trying to make to Congress, which is the EV revolution in America is about to destroy a large number of jobs in the auto industry. Tell us what you know. I mean, I think there was a recent CS report that really hit this on the head, didn't it?
Well, what we're learning is that electric vehicles, EVs, are an exciting niche product. You know, more important than the sports cars, if you like, or off-road vehicles that people like. It's a big niche product. What we're learning is not the vehicle for everybody. I mean, just technically speaking, they're, to put it in simplistic terms, they on average cost more. They are harder to fuel, and they so far have lower reliability. But they're kind of fun to drive, and there's a lot of advantages for certain classes of customers, but they're not a vehicle for everybody. That's what we're learning. So this whole push to make EVs be the only vehicle you're allowed to own or buy or operate, which is the direction of the Inflation Reduction Act and the administration, it's pretty obvious, I think, to analysts and now automakers that it's a very dangerous path economically for the businesses and, frankly, geopolitically, given the supply chain for them. And politically, for those who are pushing it, because consumers really do care about access to affordable transportation.
Yeah, great point.
Yeah. And they are fun until you try to drive from Los Angeles to Phoenix, which don't ask me why I'm so personally perturbed about that ability. With respect to EVs, though.
details. Come on, Amanda.
Right. Yes. Yes. I wasn't given the details, first of all, of the range. And that's how I got into this problem to begin with. Sir, we are seeing this industry, the EV industry, going down a path where the American people are not accepting of it and the government yet is still pushing it. Typically, when that happens, whether it's financial institutions or the car industry, there's a bailout coming. Do you foresee at some point in the future that having to happen for EV car manufacturers?
Well, I think clearly that's the risk. And I think the auto industries, frankly, are taking a very big gamble. The idea that you can make EVs as inexpensive as conventional cars is mythological. They cost more. It's now well known that Ford and GM and others are losing billions of dollars trying to manufacture inexpensive EVs. They can't. It's going to be a very, very long time before they're at price parity. So if they do this and they're pushed to do it, they run the risk that they will face bankruptcy at a point in time when Congress and a president in the not-too-distant future will bail them out or might not. I mean, the third time may not be lucky. This is, you know, we've had two bailout periods in modern history for the auto industry. Third time that might not happen again. It would be, to say it would be a shame understates the tragedy of the loss of one or more of the major industries of America to ill-advised policies. I think it's very, very high risk.
Yeah, that's a great point. Mark, you do a great job of making common sense out of a debate that often feels like it's driven by emotion. But one of the things that the Democrats want to push for decoupling fossil fuels from our economy. But the truth of the matter is, when you look at GDP, GDP and energy go hand in hand, don't they?
Well, it's even more dramatic than that. So when we say the word energy, people have a lot of things in their heads. Let's be specific and pick the pinata of all the energy industries, which is the big oil industry, oil, yep. Hydrocarbons, liquid hydrocarbons. Last year, if we look at the data, this is just data. Words matter, but the data really matters. There is a 1-to-1 correlation between per capita wealth in a country and per capita oil use. Or put differently, if you live in a wealthier country, you're using more oil. If you live in a poorer country, it's because you're using less oil. This is not a casual correlation. It's a causal correlation.
Mark, there is a colloquial phrase out there on the internet, tweeting through the ratio. When someone knows that they're doing something that's ultimately destructive and they just keep barreling down. With respect to the electric push, we are now seeing, you know, United Auto Workers coming out saying, I'm not supporting Biden. He got rid of my friend's job on day one. Obviously, the pipeline, stomping on that by Biden. Isn't this kind of counterproductive and counter to his future for a second term?
Yeah, it's a very tough balancing act. I mean, I understand. I mean, look, so call me cynical, but also practical. I mean, you know, I have a podcast called The Last Optimist, so it'll tell you something about my biases. But I'm also a bit of a political cynic. I have some sympathy. I mean, his backers want him to promote the, quote, energy transition, to abandon hydrocarbons, oil, gas, and coal. And at the same time, any efforts to do that are economically destructive. So you want to push off the economic destruction as far as possible in the future after an election. And that's as everybody knows, what the release of all the oil from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve was about, to tamp down potential for rising in oil and gasoline prices. And it worked. It helped do that, of course. So it's a very tough balancing. I think the administration probably does understand the risks, political risks and economic risks. This is why there's a little bit of a go slow in practice with the deployment of a lot of these things. Even the EPA's about to be released mandate, effectively a mandate to require 2/3 of all cars to be electric powered by the year 2032 or so. That's, you know, you think about it, that's 8 years away. And as a practical matter, automakers won't be forced to change their, you know, production lines for a few years. They do it about 5 or 6 years in advance. So you're kicking the can down the road far enough, again, cynically pointing out, to not affect the election today. So you talk about the aspirations politically, but the rubber meets the road, no pun intended, or maybe pun intended. A couple of years from now, whoever happens to be unlucky enough to be the president when the rubber meets the road and automakers start to collapse and trying to meet the mandate.
Yeah, that's a real threat. It's a very scary thing. Real quick, we got about a minute left. You just wrote a great op-ed that reminds us that energy security is not only tied to economic security, it's tied to national security, the energy to prevent and prosecute wars. What was that about?
Well, Germany is in the process of deindustrializing. And as you know, the European Union, led by President Macron, recently said that they need to step up, not just to spend money, meet their NATO commitments, but to, in the words of some analysts there, to convert their car factories into tank factories. You know, they're being both realistic and simplistic. That takes not just money, it takes industrial capacity. The brutalization of the industrial sector in Europe comes almost entirely from high energy prices and restricted energy availability. So they're deindustrializing at exactly the same time. They need more industry. Industry's based on cheap energy. Cheap energy means literally cheap oil, gas, and coal, not cheap wind.
All right, folks, that wraps up another edition of John Solomon Reports. Thanks for joining us. A big thank you to our guests, Congressman Warren Davidson and Ralph Norman. And of course, Mark Mills, colorful, brilliant. And, you know, this was a big week in Congress. Four bills passed to try to slow down Joe Biden's policies that have been harming energy prices, harming our choices, causing a significant price, not a jump, not only in gasoline at the pumps, but actually for heating our homes. Yeah, just keeping us warm. Well, Mark Mills hit that one on the head. All right, we'll be back tomorrow with another edition of John Solomon Reports. Until then, God bless you. Have a great night.